he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel, and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel, and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel thy younger daughter. And Laban said, It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days, for the love he had to her. And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, What is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service, which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. Amen. We'll end at that verse, and the Lord will add his blessing to his word for his name's sake. Now in this passage we have the account of how Jacob obtained his two wives, Leah and Rachel. He's fleeing from his father's house because he had beguiled and cheated Esau, his brother, out of the blessing. And of course, Esau's wrath was kindled. Jacob flees for safety. He comes to the house of his mother's brother, Laban. And while he waits for Laban, he meets Rachel. And during the month that follows, he works for Laban freely. And he enters into this contract for Rachel, agreeing to serve 7 years for her to become his wife. And at the end of the time, we find Jacob being beguiled, as he says in his own words in verse 25, being beguiled by his uncle. And he gives to him Leah instead, the firstborn instead. And that, of course, was an act of deception on Laban's part. But now Jacob finds himself in this situation. He now has a wife in the person of Leah, but that was not what he had contracted for. And yet he still has his love for Rachel. And so he agrees to work a further 7 years in order to receive Rachel as his wife. Now, that does not mean that he had to wait a further 7 years in order to have Rachel as his wife. It is evident that the marriage to Rachel came immediately after his marriage to Leah. And that's evident from two factors. I don't want to go into them, but simply draw your attention to them. The first factor is the length of time that he remained from that point until he returned back to Canaan. He had been there 7 years. He spent a total of 20 years in his uncle's house. And that means that there was another 13-year period of time. And during that time, we discover 11 of the children being born. 11 sons and then the daughter Dinah. And during that period, it must have been within the second 7 years that those children were born, which would indicate that he had taken Rachel to be his wife, and then he was spending the next 7 years in service to Laban, his uncle. Now, there's many lessons that come out of the incident, but it's the subject of verse 20 that I want us to ponder just for a few moments tonight. Jacob served 7 years. This is the initial 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Jacob's initial agreement and the fulfillment of the 7 years of service in order that he might receive Rachel as his wife. In fact, it turned out to be 14 years of service. But the text informs us that those years of service were rendered because of his love for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. And so the focus turns upon the subject of love. It turns upon the subject of Jacob's love for Rachel. And if you look here in the context, in the setting and the circumstances, you'll discover some characteristics about Jacob's love for Rachel. In the first place, you'll notice the motivation of love, his willingness to render 7 years of service. And that service consisted of looking after Laban's flock, tending to all the needs that arose from the flock. Those 7 years of service in exchange for Rachel were motivated by love. You see here how verse number 18, Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Now he's arrived at Laban's home, and during the first month of his stay there, he works without pay. He's not receiving any wages. Verse 14 tells us that he abode with him the space of a month, and then Laban, when he sees his industriousness, when he sees his diligence, Laban says to Jacob, because thou art my brother, or my kinsman, my relative, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? Now that's very interesting, because he's including Jacob here in the contract. And really at this point, Jacob could have asked for anything. But he says to his uncle, I will serve thee, and he sets the time, not his uncle, but he sets the time, and he says, I will render 7 years, the equivalence of 7 years' wages, for the hand of your daughter Rachel in marriage. And there you find this undisputed love. Verse 18, and Jacob loved Rachel. And it's because of that love that he then gladly says, I will serve 7 years for her. I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Verse 20, Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love that he had to her. And you can see here that the service that he willingly renders to Laban is motivated by his love for Rachel. You can see the motivation. And what a powerful illustration that is. It's an illustration of what lies at the very heart of true religion. At what lies at the very heart of all service that ought to be rendered to the Lord. Turn over to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22. And the Lord, during his earthly ministry on this occasion, sums up, gives the summary of the entire law. What is the great commandment? What is the chief commandment? What is our chief obligation? That's the essence of the question in verse 36. What is our chief obligation? What are we obligated most to do? And Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. This is the great obligation. This is the obligation that rests upon us. What is our first and chief obligation in life? It is to love God. It is to love the Lord. That is what the Lord is looking for. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. Turn over to John chapter 21. And there you have that time when the Lord puts the question to Peter. And he says to Peter, lovest thou me? Verse 15. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? What is it the Lord is looking for? What is it that the Lord questions us on? It's our love to him. Lovest thou me? Do you love me? That's what the Lord is looking for. It is the essence of true religion. It is the great, the chief obligation of our existence. It is what the Lord desires, what the Lord looks for. And then we have that statement in Revelation, the book of the Revelation, and in the chapter 2, when the Lord singles out the church at Ephesus, and he says to them in verse 4, nevertheless, I have somewhat against thee, because thou hast left thy first love. You see the emphasis the Lord is placing on love. Lovest thou me? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind. Love is to be the motivation of all that we do. Love to the Lord. Paul said, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 14, the love of Christ constraineth us. It lays hold upon us. It leaves us no option. That's what that word constrain means. It leaves us no option. Our obligation is to love the Lord. Our motivation in all that we do for him must be love. Now, some people, when it comes to religion, they're motivated by fear. They're motivated by guilt. They're motivated by self, by pride, by self-righteousness. But when we look at this illustration in Genesis 29, what motivated Jacob in rendering those years of service? It was his love for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. It was love that motivated him. And it should be love to the Lord that motivates us in all that we do. That's what the Lord is looking for. So you have in the first place the motivation of this love. And then you'll notice secondly the manipulation of this love. Jacob's love was a true love. And yet this true love for Rachel was a love that became manipulated and abused by Laban. And that's witnessed in his act of deception. Did you notice the circumstances or the sequence of events that took place? In verse 21, Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her." Notice, in the first place, Laban was slow to keep his side of the contract. He had agreed to give his younger daughter to Jacob if Jacob served 7 years. But you'll notice it's Jacob who has to come to Laban. And he has to say, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled." Laban was slow to keep his bargain. And then he failed to keep his contract. And instead of giving Rachel, he gives Leah instead. He's mistreating Jacob. And he does so in order to obtain a further 7 years of work out of him. Laban knew what he had in Jacob. He knew how diligent and how industrious, how reliable he was, what a benefit he was. And he also knew, he also recognized the love that he had for Rachel. And so he deceives him, he tricks him. He gives Leah first under the guise of darkness. When Jacob realizes what has happened, the next morning he comes to Laban and he makes this complaint. And you'll notice that Laban says in verse 27, "Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And so now he's manipulating the scene. He's manipulating the circumstances. He knows what a hard worker Jacob is, reliable, trustworthy, beneficial. He also knows the love that he has for Rachel. And so he brings him into this setting and he says, "I will give you Rachel also if you work a further 7 years." And of course, Jacob consents. Verse 28, "And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also." You see what's happening here? This genuine, this sincere love that Jacob has for Rachel is manipulated by her father Laban. And what a lesson there is there. In the spiritual realm, love for God, that pure and wholesome love for God in this world, that love will not be treated sincerely. We must never think that it will be favorably treated. It will be abused, it will be manipulated, it will be mistreated. Oh, the world will recognize it. And the world will see its sincerity and its genuineness. But remember, the world is never straight in its dealings. And where it finds that true, pure, genuine love for the Lord, it will always seek to manipulate for its own profit and benefit. Turn to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44. The Lord, speaking to his disciples, reminds us of this fact. And he says in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 44, "I say unto you, love your enemies. And your enemies are those who do not have good intention toward you, but rather evil intention. They will curse you. They will hate you. They will despitefully use you. They will persecute you. Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. What is the Lord saying? The Lord is saying, when you love me, when you love me with all your heart, that love that is pure and wholesome and genuine and true, it will be abused, it will be despitefully used by this world, mistreated. It will encounter this manipulation. Turn over to Luke chapter 6. The corresponding account. And here we have a little extra detail that is very interesting. Luke chapter 6 and verse 35. The Lord says, "But love ye your enemies, and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again." That could have been said to Jacob in his circumstances. He was lending, as it were, his service. But yet, he wasn't receiving the agreed contract, the agreed bargain. And the Lord says, do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. That's a tremendous statement. God is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. And there you have the greatest illustration of that, the manipulation of love. The greatest love that there is the love of God, the love of God to man. And yet, an evil heart will abuse, an evil heart will manipulate that very love. And it will be no different for the Lord's people, those who love the Lord, just like Jacob discovered here. That love was manipulated, that love was abused, mistreated by his uncle Laban. But notice finally, not only the motivation of love and the manipulation of love, but you'll notice the mitigation of this love. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Jacob's love had a very powerful effect. It made the 7 years seem only like a few days. And what that means is that his love made what seemed to be hard and long service, his love made that long and hard service to be short and easy. That's what that means. Love took the drudgery out of it and turned it into a delight. And what an illustration is there concerning the nature of love, concerning the power of love. True love absorbs difficulties. It absorbs sacrifices. It absorbs hardships, pains, even injustices, and makes them seem like very little, makes them seem like nothing. And where there is a heart that is full of love for Christ, it will cause that person to endure affliction, to despise shame and reproach, to expend energy, to make great sacrifice for Christ. Remember the words of C.T. Studd, "If Christ be God and died for me, there's no sacrifice too great for me to make for him." Jacob's love mitigated all the sorrow, all the hardship, all the disappointment that he encountered. And it enabled him to render that service that stretched out to 14 years because of the love that he had for Rachel. And when the heart of the believer is full of love for Christ, that love will mitigate all the sorrows, all the difficulties, all the hardships. What is the source of such love? Turn over to 1 John chapter 4. 1 John chapter 4 and verse number 19. Here's the secret. What is it that will cause the heart of the believer to flow in love for Christ? Here's the secret. 1 John 4 and verse 19. And John says, we love him because he first loved us. Love for Christ is stimulated, stirred up, strengthened by the knowledge of Christ's love to us. Love begets love. That's what John's highlighting here. The first cause is Christ's love to us. The effect is our love to him. And the secret of a strong love for Christ, it's not a morbid, introspective bemoaning of our lack of love. It is rather the contemplation of his love for us. That's what will fan the flame of our love to him. When we contemplate his love, when we dwell upon his love, when we consider, when our hearts have the love of God shed abroad within us, something happens. It kindles the fire of our love for him. And when that fire is kindled and the heart is burning, then it will be said of us as it was said of Jacob, it seemed unto him but a few days for the love that he had to her. This love will mitigate all the hardships, all the difficulties, and it will be rendered gladly, willingly, wholeheartedly to the Lord. What we need, what the church needs. You hear people say, oh, what the church needs. You know what's needed? Love for Christ. That's what's needed. Love for Christ. And where the heart is burning with love for Jesus, you'll not have any shortage of workers. You'll not have any shortage of whatever needs there may be, because that love will respond to the need gladly, willingly. This is the great need. We need to make sure that the love of our heart for Christ is stirred up, kindled. And that only happens whenever we contemplate his great love to us. Let's turn to our hymn books as we come to pray, and we'll sing number